Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
All right. When I was in camp, when I was a younger boy, not so young, I probably was 11, 12, 13 years on that range, we had a program. It was in an Orthodox camp. We had a program with a BBYO, B'nai B'rith, camp. It was a BBYO leadership training camp. All the kids that were there had either been, I don't know if they were self-selected or they'd been selected to go to the summer camp. You know, they played sports, but the other half of their day was Jewish leadership training. And we ended up having this like color war of sorts between my camp and this camp. We played sports half the day, and then we had some learning sessions the other half. And I remember during one of those sessions in which there was half a group of kids from my camp, 13, 14-year-old kids, and half the kids were from the other camp, that the leader, who happened to come from their camp, posed the following provocative question to our group. Which Jew, he said, is better? The Jew who was born in somewhere in Omaha, Nebraska, and was born into a family that had no Jewish identity, and didn't have any Jewish education, and on his own came to the realization, he discovered he was Jewish, and he looked into things, and he started learning a little bit, and he would keep some form of kosher on his own. Didn't do anything else, but he came to it on his own, and a great self-sacrifice added to his level of observance, and did that. Or, he said, asking a bunch of uninspired Orthodox kids, is the child who grew up in an observant home, and who does a little bit less than what he had been brought up to do, so that he's wearing tzitzis and tefillin and he's learning and Shabbos and kashrus, but his levels of observance is a little bit less than what he was brought up to do. So who's better, he asked. The kid who ends up doing just one mitzvah, but he came to it on his own and a great self-sacrifice was able to fulfill it, or the kid who's doing hundreds of mitzvahs, but they're all at a little bit lower of a level than what he started from. I think if you put it on a number scale, is the kid who started at an 80 and ends up at a 75, is he better than the kid who started at a 3 and ends up at a 5? So do you look at it 75 versus 5, or you look at it negative 5 versus positive? How do you view that situation? Now it's the provocative question which he asked a bunch of young teenagers from these two various camps. Good question, huh?
Yeah.
What do you say to that kind of question?
Either, both fail.
Both fail. Okay, so who's better?
The Omaha
child, and the reason for that would be?
Well, yeah, the Baal Tshuva thing, like, you know, who's better, somebody who became from or somebody who's from all their lives, because they know what they're...
Okay, but that Gemara would be with they're both on a 75. One was born at a 75 and ends up at a 75, and one that started at a 10 and ended up at a 75. So the Gemara says, and that place where the Baal Tshuva is... I don't know if that Gemara is talking about a person who's still not keeping kosher, not keeping Shabbos, not keeping anything. He just... one little thing he's doing.
Well, I said it was like that. So it was easy to compare it to the same.
Compare it to you.
However, now that you like punch a lot of holes in that thing, I don't know.
Yeah, that's probably, sure.
I don't know what I'm standing. I don't need anything else to stand on, so I'm just going to keep. But long story short is that, you know, somebody who is even gains like a 1 foothold on the ladder is still higher on the ladder than somebody who went down. So again, so what a Jew is, somebody who, you know, if you're not growing up, then you're going to go down. So at least there's one person who went from nothing to one rung up a ladder is better than somebody who went down 5 rungs, no matter how high he was.
He's not looking at what he's actually doing, even though this one Jew is observing far more. You're right. Just looking at where he got.
I don't know. I would say a little different. As long as he's still doing something, you know, even though it's not as much as before, but he's not going completely off. So that's still a level in and itself.
Near what you say?
Well, I'm in the Torah says, you know, all my efforts.
Keep them all.
Keep them all.
So
okay.
It's better to be doing it than not to be doing them.
Not yet. Who really keeps everything in this? Like, Rabbanus included, really?
I don't know anybody.
Yeah.
They're apostles.
All right, well, it was a provocative discussion, and it has continued. When I throw this question out, I find this to be a very provocative discussion in general. So let's take a look at tonight's Medrash. Tonight's measures, the number one on your sheet starts as follows. So this actual pasuk, the first pasuk we're going to discuss is from next week's parsha, but the entire discussion of it is going to relate to this week's parsha. Hashem, when he destroyed the cities of the plains, this is discussing the destruction of Sodom and Amorah. Vayizkor Elohim es Avraham. Hashem remembered Avraham as he's about to destroy these cities. Vayishlach es Lot mitocha hafeichan. Therefore he sent Lot, Avraham's nephew, out from the destruction. He sent the angels, the whole story, where they came, they told him, you gotta get out. People of the city wanted to kill the angels, they wanted to take him, throw him out. Lot protects him, saves him, they tell him the message, you gotta get out in the morning. Lot does, and he's saved. And the way the Torah describes it is Hashem wanted to, as he was destroying the plains, he remembered Avraham and sent Lot out. The Medrash comments as follows, Ma zechira nizkar lo. What remembrance did he remember about him? Vayizkor Elokim es Avraham. So the Medrash, picking up on the language of the pasuk, says he actually remembered the shtika sheshosak laAvraham. Hashem remembered the silence that Lot kept towards Avraham. What was the silence that Lot kept to Avram that was the big merit that he deserved to be saved from the destruction? Bishah Shomer Avram al Soro Achosihi. In this week's parsha, Avram goes down to Mitzrayim and he says to his wife, Sora, you know, you're a beautiful woman. I'm going to have lots of problems if we go down. Everybody's going to see you. They're going to want to take you. They're going to kill me. Bad news. Why don't you tell them you're my sister? Now the Torah doesn't necessarily recount that while that conversation is going on, there's another person there that they traveled down to Mitzrayim with. They took Lot with them. So when Avram and Sarah are telling this story to everybody, yeah, sure, she's my sister, don't we look alike? Lot's standing there. Says the Medrash, Hayalot Yodea Vishosek. Lot was silent, didn't say anything about the fact that he knew the truth. He knew it. Doesn't say anything. So when the cities are about to be destroyed, what merit stands at the side of Lot that he's saved from this? The fact that he had the opportunity to rat out his uncle Avram, and he did it. That's the Medrash, which is an interesting Medrash, because as we read through the Parsha this week, in this week's Parsha, there's one trait of Lot which stands out, and that is, this is a man who's standing there by the gates of the city. These two strangers come up, and Lot knows what Sodom's record is with dealing with strangers, and he invites them into his home, and they say, no, we'll stay outside. And he says, you can't, they're going to kill you if you stay outside. And he forces them into his house. He, you have to come in. He's happy.
First of all, he didn't have angels, right?
No. No.
I don't think so.
Not certainly when he first saw. I don't think when he first saw them. So he's willing. So the people, his house gets surrounded, and he's willing to do anything to save these people. He's willing to give his two daughters up. He says, "You know what? To the people here, take my daughters, but you can't touch my guests." So I would say that's a nice, here's a person who has clearly developed, I don't know what he was like as a person as a whole, but when it comes to the mitzvah of Hachnas Zorchim, here's a person who's willing to literally risk his life and risk his family in order to protect these people, to bring them in. And that doesn't really seem to stand so much in his corner. That Chazal, the fact that he had this trait about him, willing to do that in the city of cities, you know what allowed him to be saved? Because his uncle... Now, we can imagine what Avram was like. Let's try to picture. What was the person of Avram Avinu like, going down to Mitzrayim? Probably a pretty big tzaddik at this point. This is already after Lech Lecha Me'artzecha Me'molad Etzcha. Hashem has already spoken to him, sent him to Eretz Canaan. So Lot, what would have happened if Lot rapped out his uncle Avram? What happens to Avram?
He would have been killed.
He dies. They take Sarah, and what happens to Lot?
He gets nothing.
He would either get nothing, he probably thought he would be rewarded for ratting him out or something, I don't know. So he has an opportunity to have his uncle killed, person of the likes of Avram Avinu, so he withstood the test.
But
he doesn't have his uncle killed, yeah.
But didn't he, I mean, he said
my uncle has no heirs. I'm going to inherit everything that Abraham comes with. It was his like goal in life was to make sure that Abraham made it. Because he...
Unless he wouldn't have gotten anything.
Right.
Yeah, but I wasn't rich at this point.
But he's not rich at this point.
But wouldn't he have...
No, but even so...
But you're saying he knew Hashem. He talked to him. I mean, obviously he was promised...
Abraham had been promised that already. That's correct. So he has an opportunity to have him killed. And you're adding to the question.
Well...
And he doesn't. And that's his big reward.
Right. But it would be... If we're casting him as a not so great character, it would make sense for him to have his heir or his uncle built up so that when he does pass away... He can inherit his property, and it could be passed on through him.
But wouldn't he have
the
arson when he got killed?
In the garage versus
you could have said that if he when he got killed, he would have arsoned it earlier.
But he already knew that Hashem had said, through you, I'm going to. So you could think, okay, so the legacy is set by him.
Right, but he would have wanted to rat him out then.
And therefore...
But he didn't have the
situation.
You're saying he should have had him killed.
And he
could have figured out which way he's been.
He's extraordinarily wealthy.
I mean,
he gained that situation. So much from not doing
well, at this point, nothing has happened. In other words, in argument against what you're saying, at this point, Avram's going down with nothing, and he has nothing at that point. So,
right.
I mean, at best he has enough money to pay for his hotel.
Right.
He's not going down with lots of stuff. He becomes wealthy in Mitzrayim.
No.
And on the way down, Avram is saying, say that you're my sister so that they give me all this stuff. Which is what would have gone to Lot if he would have apparently said something.
Right.
And there Chazal say he's silent and for that he's rewarded.
Yeah.
And that's the big reward that he gets. That's the schus that Chazal see.
How come the whole dialogue of Torah is like, what's not even mentioned when he got out of the tribe?
Where would he be mentioned?
Like you say, Avram went down to the tribe.
Is that it?
What's not even mentioned when he was out of the tribe? He was with him. Or during that whole episode. He's never mentioned it all at once.
It says by Yerid Avrami Mitzrayim who Velot. It says that after Mitzrayim, after the incident with Mitzrayim, who Vishova Holosherlo Velot Yimoha Negba. He goes down to the Negba from Mitzrayim. And I remember there was a Rashi about where he was going down from, but either way, he was going. It does mention Lot in the story, but it's only after the Mitzrayim incident.
Right, and at the time he wasn't into the story.
I'm just commenting on when Lot was mentioned.
But it doesn't say, in other words, it's about Hero of God, but Yerid Avram Mitzrayim. It doesn't say they were sorry either.
Well, because his wife actually, like, when he told his wife, you know, you realize you're beautiful. But she brought him the whole story. You know, like, possibly.
Okay, so what is there asking a question?
Yeah.
I mean, he has no role, other than the fact that he's silent, so he's not mentioned because he was there. He comes up with empty. Clearly, was down there. Doesn't say anything. What should he? You know, there's no. I guess there's no reason to have him be mentioned.
He's not part of the birth of Israel.
He's mentioned later. Vegan Lot haholeif es Avram hayatzon uvakar, and also Lot who had gone with Avram had all this stuff. So he's mentioned later in the next parak. You know, on the way back, that he was with him and he also got this stuff.
That's where the whole machlokas came about.
So where did Lot get this trait? Where does Lot get this trait of Hachnasas Orchim from? So we have, he's willing to sacrifice everything. He's willing to take in these people. So Chazal said, that didn't come out of nowhere. Where does Lot grow up? Grows up in the house of Avram. So if you grow up in the house of Avram, there are certain traits which are going to rub off on you. So the Medrash says it as follows, in number 2, Amar Shlomo, Chanoich Lenar Al Pidarko, train, teach, educate your child according to his way. And when he grows old, he won't stray from it. If you teach him well when he's young, your mechanichim will leave aside all the meanings of chanoch. Says the Medrash, Ayideh shegidah Lot beveso shel Avram, because Lot grew up in the house of Avram, tofas midos, if he grabbed hold of his traits, of his midos. And the Medrash goes through, Vayishtachu arzu, when these two malachim show up in the city, Lot bows down before them. Where did that Lot learn to bow down before these two visitors? Because that's exactly what Avram does in the beginning of next week's parasha. Or when Avram is visited by his guests, He understands also to bow down to them. Kishem Shasa Avram Vayitzer Bamod, and he insists, you must come inside. Shalaman Mimaisav Shal Avram. He learns from the actions of Avram. So Lot has a trait. He has a trait of Achnasas Orchim. And that's a trait which came from Avram. That's where he learned it from. He grew up in the house. When you grow up in the house of someone as great as Avram, you pick up certain things along the way. Lot also...
No, I was saying, was this a trait that Lot had, you know, has done always, or was this just like a one-time momentum that happened and it just happened to be?
The way the Chazal say it, like, this is something that he did, this is something that he learned from the house of Avram. That's, you know, he was sitting outside waiting for people. In
so
Sodom.
Even,
it sounds
even
like
in
something
Sodom.
That he did. That it sounds like. Okay. So you have a trait of Hachnasas Orchim, which was part of Lot's makeup, something that he does, which he learned in the house of Avram. He has another trait, which is greed. And we see that in the language when Avram returns. This is what you were discussing earlier. And he says, "Vayomer Avram Lot, halo kol ha'aretz lefanacha." The fight takes place between their shepherds. And Avram says, listen, the whole land is before you. He pared no me, like, separate yourself from me. Rashi says, what were they arguing about? So Lot has a very interesting argument. Lot says, we're grazing in other people's fields. We have all this cattle. We need to give them food to eat. So we're letting them graze. And Avram's shepherds say, you know how to do that? These aren't our fields. You can't steal. And what's Lot's argument? So Lot says, well, Shem really promised this land to Avram. So it's going to be his. Avram doesn't have any children. So Lot's the next of kin. So therefore, we can take it now. So when you stop and think about their argument and say, imagine if a nephew would say to his uncle, you know, you have this car that you're driving around. You're still alive, but I really want that car. You're going to die eventually anyway. You don't have any kids. So it's going to be mine. So I'm just going to take it now. So while you're asleep, I'm just going to walk in and take your car because it's mine. So what do you mean it's mine? Well, because you're eventually going to die. And when you die... So then I'm going to get it, and because it's not even Avram's yet. Forget about the fact that you're claiming to be the next in line. It's not even his. You're taking it from somebody who hasn't yet even taken possession of it, and then claim that when that person's going to die, he doesn't have anybody to give it to, so it's going to go to you. You think that that's not a logical argument that somebody would make, to think that something is theirs now, even before the person who they're claiming they're going to inherit it from. He doesn't even have it yet. Really, it would be much more analogous to the fact of your uncle who's planning on buying a car from the lot.
Right.
And he hasn't bought it yet. So you go to the lot, and you take it, and you say, he's going to buy it in a couple of weeks anyway. That's the plan. And when he buys it, he's eventually going to die. And when he dies, he doesn't have a kid. It's going to be mine. So I'll just take it now. You're kidding me? That's ridiculous. So what causes someone to think that way? So money is blinding enough to cause somebody to think that way. That's where that would come from. And Chazal see that when Avram says to him, he parade no male, I separate from me, which is the same language that we find later, which Shlomo Melech uses in Mishlei, l'ta'ava yivakesh nifrad.
Mm-hmm.
One who desires or seeks lust, v'taiva will be nifrad. The same language that Avram says, he parade, will be separated. And the Medrash Darshan's, who is that referring to, l'ta'ava yivakesh nifrad? That's Lot. That's somebody who is caught up in his desires for money. When he's leaving, in next week's Pesach, when the destruction is about to take place, and a Balkore knows there's one of only three places where we have Eskeberth of Shalshalas,
yep.
On the word Vayismaha Mea.
Vayismaha
Mea.
Right. Vayismaha Mea.
He delayed.
Vayismaha
Mea. What's he waiting for? What's
right,
he delayed for?
To get his money,
so
right?
Chazal say he was troubled. The city's about to be destroyed. And he's got all this money, Rashi says. He's worried about his money. In the language of the Medrash, Kama Ibud Bekesav Vizov Avonim Tovosim, I go, got all these precious stones, all this gold, all this silver, what's going to be with it? And he couldn't pull himself away. Say, look, do you believe it's going to be destroyed or not believe it's going to be destroyed? So when he spoke to his son-in-law the previous night, he was pretty adamant. No, this is going to happen. It's going to be destroyed. He said, yeah, and they started laughing at him, and he said, you're going to die. And they laughed. And he said, really? And they laughed, and he left. He left their house, he goes home to get his stuff, he's out the door,
and he stops and he can't leave. Lot, is it going to happen or is it not going to happen? He's a believer. And when it comes time to physically leaving behind the gold and the silver and the jewel, he can't go. Can't leave it behind, because the whole reason he separates from Avram Avinu, he leaves him behind, he goes to the place of the wicked, because that's where pastures are lush, that's where the money is. And to leave it behind, that's where his issue, so to speak, is. So Rosh Hashiva itself, Rav Goldrich writes, based on Rav Dessa, Dessa has a piece, an oft-quoted piece, in which he discusses what he calls the Nekudas HaBechira, the point of free will. Free will is one of the fundamental tenets in all of our lives, in all of Judaism, that we have the ability, the free will, to choose to make our decisions in life. It's not free to make our decisions. So Rav Dessler has a piece in discussing that. What's the concept of free will? When I have a choice of wearing my red tie or my blue tie, my brown socks or my blue socks, so is that an element of free will? Am I exerting free will when I make that decision?
That's what your wife said.
Right, let's assume that she's not. If that's true, that might be true. That might be true. But if she's not in the equation,
then
she's not in the equation, if I'm deciding between Cheerios and cornflakes for breakfast in the morning, so I have free will. I'm deciding. It's my choice. No one can tell me what to do. So it's not really free will. Kiva Tantz discusses this. That's a mechanical decision. Animals make decisions also what they want to do. You have choices, but that's not the definition, the concept of free will. Free will is specifically in the area of morality, when you're choosing between that which is right and that which is wrong. And Rav Dessner has a whole long piece discussing that that's specifically at exactly the point where you're in the war between that which you understand to be true and that which you're not so sure about, or that which the Yetzirah has a good hold on us. So that, for example, if I ask somebody, are you going to drive to shul on Shabbos? You would say, absolutely, I'm going to drive to shul on Shabbos. This is why I'm not allowed to drive on Shabbos. So the decision not to drive on Shabbos is not a decision where you're struggling with that which is right at that point of the raging war of right versus wrong. It's because it's already something that it's part of you, it's part of what you do, it's part of what you understand, and it's what you go for. There are certain things we do on Shabbos that are absolutely wrong that we don't even know about. In Rav Dessler's language, there's a battlefront, there's a front line, and there are things behind the front line and things below, beyond the front line, and the war is only on that exact point where I really shouldn't do this. I'm not really, maybe it does apply, it doesn't apply, it is true, it's not true. That inner battle that we have over those things, that's the area where there's actually the nekuda, that's the point where we struggle with our free will and where we exert free will, where we have the choice to make a correct decision in a point where we can really go either way with it.
8 o'clock, 15.
Things like that. Things like that.
9 o'clock.
Always 9 o'clock. 9 o'clock is the place to be. Rav Dessler's language when he discusses this concept,
what?
I quote on the bottom, Rav Dessler's language is, the point of free will is the place where his understanding of truth clashes with his sense of falsehood. But most of our actions, Rav Dessler writes, don't relate to this point at all. Almost all of our actions over the course of the day have really nothing to do with this point of free will. There are many actions that are on the side of truth, meaning we're doing the right thing, but that we've been trained or educated, he writes, to do, and we do without thinking that there's a possibility we would do anything else. I always like to bring an example of putting tzitzis on in the morning. I wear tzitzis every morning, and it's not a thought process. It's not a decision that I'm making. I should wear tzitzis, I shouldn't wear tzitzis, it's too hot, it's too cold. It's simply not on my radar screen. It's just part of my routine. Put on socks, put on an undershirt, I'm putting on my tzitzis, put on my shirt, and it's done without any thought process. It doesn't mean it's not a mitzvah. It doesn't mean there's not reward for it. But that's nothing to do, it has nothing to do with free will.
Right.
It's something that I do without thought. Which is what I do when I put on my tefillin, when I make kiddush on Shabbos. It's just part of my routine. When I come home, when I make it, like, well, this is my meal. I'm sitting around the table with my family. I'm going to make kiddush. Was it an aspect of my free will that's being exerted on making kiddush? No. There's mitzvah, there's a schar, I did it. But it's not the nekuda of bechira. It's not my free will.
Right.
That
could
is only
somebody else's free will. Free will.
100%.
Right.
And there was a point in someone's life where maybe putting on tzitzis was a big discussion for them. And it was a major ordeal whether or not
they should, it's too hot, they have all the excuses that go through their head. There's no way, I don't know, I have to, it's not a four-corner garment I'm wearing anyway, whatever they would come up with. And there's this inner battle of I shouldn't. For that person to put on tzitzis is an exertion of their free will. And there are people who don't even think about it. I've spoken with many high school kids, I'll say, you're wearing tzitzis today. And they'll be like, no. Like, did you think about it this morning? Like, it didn't even cross my mind that I would do that. So it wasn't a battle where they lost. It just wasn't on the radar screen. Because many people, Bali Tshuva, Kashrus, is that they'll talk about this until they're blue in the face. The idea of, and they'll talk about all the restaurants. They'll say, when I get off of 85, and they'll list to me all of the restaurants from 85 to, you know, until you make the turn of Dome. I'm like, I never even noticed those things.
Right.
I wasn't aware that they were there. Like, what is that place? That's a restaurant? I didn't know what that place was. Because it's not on my radar screen that I'm not going to eat kosher. Right? It's not something I think about. I don't even notice the restaurants. I couldn't tell you what's where. But for others, it's a major clash because they're in that battle, and it's every drive past is a battle. And then there's a point when you move beyond that. In Rav Dessler's language, the point of Bechira is where we actually are exerting that free will. Another thing else is, these are mitzvahs that we do, and these are things that we don't do, even though we should. The Rosh Hashiva, the Tzav Goldberg, learned that that's the pshat in the Medrash. When you're talking about what's going to define a person, what makes you who you are, so that's only based on the Bechira. We're trained and educated in Rav Dessler's language to do a certain behavior. We were all born into different families, at different points in history, in different cities, in different towns, and by the time we came to our own selves, whatever age that is, some of us at 14, 15, 20, 25, 35, whatever it is when a person is now like functioning on their own, not under the direct guidance of their parents, you're at a certain level. What got you to that level? That's based on 1,000 different factors. Who you are and what you'll be defined at starts there, and where are you going to go from here? You're going up, you're going down, because that's where your bechir is, where you're now making decisions. If you were brought up in a family that keeps kosher and you never entertained the thought of not keeping kosher, so kosher is not in your battle. That's not going to define you. You're not going to be defined as a person who kept kosher because you didn't fight for that. It wasn't a battle. Will you get schar for keeping kosher? Of course. Every mitzvah you do get schar. Will it be the type of schar because it's going to be defining as to who you are? Not at all. That's nothing to define you. It's something you were given. You'll have your own battles. We all have our battles wherever we are in life, and it's constantly changing. Those are the battles that define us. So Rosh Hashiva, and that's what the Medrash is saying. Did Lord get, did he merit to be saved because of the mitzvah of Hachnasas Orchem that he had ingrained in him? Not at all. Where did he get that from? That's Avram. He grew up in the house of Avram. This is what he did. And the proof that he got it from Avram, that it wasn't his, what's the proof?
He hasn't paid it.
No, that's not.
It's out there.
I don't think I think the proof is. I think the proof is his daughters. Saying, how do we know that his Achnasus Orchim wasn't true chesed?
Because he didn't have his priorities straight.
I think because he's willing to sacrifice his daughter. Meaning, yeah. Like, this is what I do. I do Achnasus Orchim.
That's so over the top, though. Well,
that's not what Avram would have done. He would have been willing to give up.
In other words, I do Achnas Zorchim because that's what I do.
Right.
And I'm willing to say, that's not a normal thing to do. If you're trying to be a buff, you sacrifice your daughters.
Right, so what if they instead said, give us all your gold and we'll go away?
So that would have been a totally different story.
Right, so do you see that?
I don't know what he would have done in that situation. That would have then forced him into a whole different realm.
But it's just such a complicated character. Like, what do you mean? Like, you give up your own flesh and blood.
Yeah.
But your money, like, it's so awesome.
I don't know what he would have done for the money. I have no idea what he would have done.
I've known that the entire city was about to be destroyed. He fought for his money.
Right. From
he pulled away.
For even himself, 100%.
So,
therefore what?
Conflict. Because why would he do that for his own daughter? I understand what you're saying. This is how he's caring for his guests. But it's so...
Because he wasn't on the same level as Avram.
I'm not hearing your point.
Because he's willing to sacrifice his daughters.
Yeah.
Fine. Forget about it. They're gone. But we're also the same breath, we're the same thought. His money is so important to him that
he can't pull himself away from that.
Right, it's so... Like on two opposite extremes, you know? I'm so dedicated to this one mitzvah that I'm willing to go...
But it's dedicated mindlessly. That's the point.
Right.
It's not because it's not because of my mitzvah. It's because I learned it from the house of Avram.
I thought you were saying he's also taken to the point where it's such an internal part of him that he's.
I'm not saying internalized, I'm saying because I think it's a proof of the mindlessness of it. Yeah. That it's not because I've internalized chesed, it's because I wear tzitzis mindlessly. Okay. Someone would say to me, we have, I understand, it's 95 degrees today. You're wearing wool tzitzis. What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
Like, oh, I didn't realize that.
Right.
Like, I didn't put on my tzitzis and say, like, I'm going to be most. It was totally like this is what I do.
Right.
So I take care of my guests.
How come I'm about to say, I mean, here's a city where by showing this form of hospitality, you were kind of all types of punishment. So how do I know it wasn't a struggle? Maybe it was a struggle for him. It wasn't like he was getting some for it.
So I'm saying from Chazal are saying,
yeah,
his merit came from when he goes down to Mitzrayim and he has an opportunity to rat out his uncle and have his uncle killed and he's silent. There Chazal see, whoa. Lot, who's willing to separate from his uncle for a couple of bucks, who is not able to leave a city that he believes is going to be destroyed for his money, is willing to give up on making some money in Mitzrayim by telling the truth. That's something. That's defining
who he is.
He didn't have anything at that point. At that point, he was traveling alone.
So there was no Yetzirah of the money.
No, that's exactly that's where he could have gotten rich. Here's his.
How did he know?
Because
that
Avram says, "Tell me you're your sister. They'll give me all these gifts, and I'll be able to survive that way."
Right.
And he could have gotten all of those gifts.
That's the husband.
So he would have had Lot killed, and now he's in charge of her. So Lot has the opportunity of doing that, and he gives up on the opportunity at his first big break. There, Chazal see an expression of Lot's self. Hachnasas Orchem, put aside. That's, you know, schar, he did a mitzvah, but that's not an expression of who he is. And the Rashiva learned that's the idea that there's schar for the mitzvahs. But in defining who you are, those are only the challenges that you face in those places of Bechira and where you end up. So that it would seem to me in the initial question that we started, like, who's better? The guy at 75 or the guy at 5? So I don't know how the schar is given out in Shemayim, but the real answer is that there are two different cheshbonos, the two different calculations. On the one hand, the guy's getting 75 is getting the mitzvah for doing the 75 his whole life. All the kashras, all the Shabbos, all the tzitzis, all the tzolin, there's schar for all of that. The guy who's at a 5, not getting any of that. That's a lifetime's worth of schar. There's also an element of when he gets up to Shemayim, we say, like, who are you? This guy's a -5. He's a nobody. From where he started, his parents dropped him off at a level 80, and he dies at a level 75. He's doing less than what he was trained to do. I don't know how that works in Shemayim. I don't know who's better. I don't know if the schar that he gets, the 75 that he's done his whole life, I don't know what happened. I don't know how that works. But in defining, when they say the neshama of Ploni ben Ploni, stand up and let's see who you are, he's in big trouble. He hasn't accomplished anything. Whereas the guy who started at a 3 and climbs to a 5, he'll have what to show for himself. Even though, how many mitzvahs did he? He did very few. I don't know how those play off each other. It's a provocative question because there really is no answer. We don't have the answer down here in this world. What the value of those two types of schar is, I don't know. But there are two separate ways of defining. There's the schar for the mitzvahs that I do, and then there's who am I? What have I become? I mean, you don't get credit for who you are on the things that you were trained to do. That's what you were trained to do. And there's schar for that. It's better to be born at an 80 than at a 5. Because you're just starting at a higher place. You're doing more mitzvahs. You're doing the right thing. But when who you are defined by is what you then accomplish from your places of Bechira from then on out. And all of us, at whatever stages we have those points. And the Shiva learned that's all derived from the way that Chazal saw in Lot the reward for silence in Mitzrayim and ignored whatever element of Achnasas Orchem he had, which is derived from the house of Avram. That's the Medrash on Parshas Lech Lecha.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.